This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is sharing the message that connection is crucial because good relationships are an essential and sometimes overlooked component of mental well-being. If your relationships could use some strengthening, a licensed therapist from Talkspace can help. Therapy can help you communicate better with loved ones, repair conflicts, and understand how to address loneliness and build community. It's easy to sign up. Just go to Talkspace.com and you'll be paired with a therapist within 2 days. You'll meet with your therapist online on your schedule. Plus, Talkspace is in network with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. Make personal connections a priority and start today. If you're not covered by insurance, get $80 off your first month with Talkspace when you go to Talkspace.com and enter promo code SPACE80. That's SPACE80. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com and enter promo code SPACE80.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome back
to Darren Donick and Chase.
Willie Donick, Chase McCabe here with you. The Marlins have just tied it on a solo shot. They have answered Ronald Acuna's home run. And it is Mr. Rojas, the shortstop. I always want to say Mel Rojas. He used to be a relief pitcher, but it is Miguel Rojas, who actually had a great short season there for the Marlins. He's one of the no-names that has been a key for Don Mattingly's squad. Somebody who's watched Don Mattingly play a lot of games as a Yankee fan growing up is Mitch Light, who is ready to talk some college football with us. Mitch, we're calling your segment Mitch After Mason. We feel like it has a nice ring to it. Do you approve of this?
Yeah, I think so. It's got a decent ring to it. I don't know if Coach Mason, you know, approves. I don't know if he needs to approve. But I can handle that. It's not bad.
So, Mitch, we just talked to Coach Mason about the ups and downs of the first 2 weeks. And of your observation, knowing that program the way you do, after two games, are you more pleasantly surprised with what you've seen? Are you a little worried about what's coming? Because they're now going into a section of their schedule where if they're going to have success, these are the teams that you should match up a little bit better with. You knew it was going to be tough the first two games against Texas A&M and LSU. But from here, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we'll find out more over the next few weeks about how competitive this team can be. There were things to like and things to be really concerned about in the first few weeks. This is not breaking ground, but my biggest concern before the season was not the quarterback, it was the offensive line, because can't get anything done up front on the offensive line, you've almost got no hope offensively. And I would say I've been pleasantly surprised by the offensive line. I think we talked last week. I thought they held up for about three quarters in the Texas A&M game and then maybe got a little fatigued. I think they went with all five guys, same five guys in the offensive line in the Texas A&M game. Rotated a little bit, I think, at right tackle.
I think they used six. Is that right, for the most part?
Six, I believe, in the LSU game. So not using a lot of bodies there, but they're getting enough of a push, and Javion Marlow is doing a decent job or doing a good job running the ball. So I guess I'm pleasantly surprised with the offense's ability to run the ball, but clearly need to make more plays down the field. Ken Seals has shown some good things, and he's shown some things you would expect from a freshman. You know, little things, I thought, Willie. Like, I don't remember the exact situation, but in the first half, I think Vanderbilt got to about midfield. It was first down and had a little swing pass opportunity where if it's completed, it's at least 8 yards. You're setting up a second and two. Well, the throw was a little out in front of the receiver, and second and 10 instead. And I think the drive stalled. And then on that fourth down play, again, I think near midfield or about the 40-yard line, they missed the receiver, just threw it behind him a little bit. And just when you have the issues that Vanderbilt has, you can't make mistakes like that. So I think there's, you know, a lot of room for this offense to grow. I think from a Vanderbilt standpoint, it'll be nice to play a team without as much talent as Texas A&M and LSU defensively. Now, both of those teams have had issues in other games this year, but there's no doubt that from a speed, size, and just overall talent, those are two of the better, you know, more talented teams in the league.
So, Mitch, we had this discussion earlier in the week. Tennessee has now won 8 straight games. 6 of them are conference games. One of the others is the bowl game against the Power 5. None of the wins jump out at you as this amazing win against a top 5 team or anything. But it reminded me a lot of the discussion because there are some people who are like, well, they haven't beaten anybody yet. But it reminds me some of James Franklin's years, especially the back-to-back 9-4s, where they weren't only winning the games against the average to below average teams in the league, but in many cases they were throttling those teams. Tennessee's beating handily of Missouri, to me, is a point of graduation. There's a middle ground, and it's nothing to sneeze at, where you get to the point where if there's a team that doesn't bring much to the table and you smoke that team, there's a lot to be said for that. Maybe it's not where you want to end up eventually if you're Tennessee, but they've graduated out of losing to the likes of Georgia State.
Yeah, my thoughts exactly. You know, you can poke holes in their winning streak last year, as people did. You know, looking at it, you know, beat Kentucky by 4, Missouri by 4, Vanderbilt by 18, scored late to pull away there, then the Indiana comeback. So, you know, you give them credit for winning those games, but it's fair to point out that they weren't the most impressive. And that's what I would say about college football. That's why we dive into stats and results and scores, because you don't play that many games. And, you know, not all 8-4 teams are created equally, not all 6-6 teams. But I think you make the good point that Tennessee just looks like a better team in the first two games this year than they did last year, and it starts up front. You know, if you're going to ask coaches, where do you want to be best on the field? I think every coach would want to say, I want to have the best quarterback. But after that, they say, I want to be probably the best on the offensive line in Tennessee. And you saw this coming. If you pay attention to recruiting, and recruiting's not everything, but they were just getting too many commitments from 5-star offensive linemen for the offensive line not to be good at some point, and we're seeing it. But I don't want to contradict myself here because, as you know, Willie, love talking about stats. From a stats standpoint, Tennessee only outgained Missouri 5.7 yards per play to 5.5. Now, I know Missouri, you know, moved the ball some in the second half, but watching that game, it just Tennessee seemed to dominate. So that's one game where I would almost throw those stats out because Tennessee was clearly the better team. And while they didn't totally pull away, you know, until the fourth quarter, they were in control pretty much the entire game.
I agree. They were sort of on cruise control there. So, yeah, that is the beauty of the stats, and that's where maybe analytics come in, balancing and putting in context the 5.7 versus the 5.5. Let's bounce around the league here. Arkansas now has taken Georgia pretty deep into the third quarter before they kind of collapsed, and so the final score may not be really indicative of what they accomplished in that game. Then they come back and get a really nice win last Saturday. That's as positive stuff as you've seen out of Arkansas in a good while there. How good are they?
Yeah, I looked this up, only talking about stats. Arkansas is only the 6th team in the last 20 years, SEC team, to win a conference road game, in which it had 275 yards of offense and gave up 400 or more. So I just looked at the box score. You know, you look and you think Mississippi State wins that game. They took advantage of some turnovers. They had a really good defensive game plan. They dropped a lot of guys in coverage. And I don't know if this is going to be a blueprint or what have you, but Bill Connolly on ESPN.com had an interesting point earlier. He said Barry Odom, who's now the defensive coordinator at Arkansas, was, you know, played at Missouri and was on some of Gary Pinkel's staffs back in the Big 12 days. And Missouri always did well and always had a good game plan for Mike Leach's Texas Tech teams. And if you follow Mike Leach, he'll even tell you his offense hasn't changed over the years. They do the same thing. They've done it for years. And clearly Arkansas had a good game plan for it and then took advantage of some opportunities. You know, Arkansas didn't really do much offensively in the second half. You look at their drive charts, a lot of three and outs. They were just opportunistic. Then obviously Mississippi State blew that punt late in the game, but there was no guarantee they were going to come back and win. So obviously it's a huge win for a first-year coach and Sam Pittman. Really could not be off to a better start. You know, obviously 2-0 is better than 1-1, but playing Georgia well and then winning on the road the week after Mississippi State, what they did to LSU, great start for the Sam Pittman era.
Well, let's talk Georgia, because I know a lot of Tennessee fans are curious, how will they stack up? But let's specify, or let's hone in on the quarterback situation, because you have this long list of guys that Georgia had as candidates to jump in there and be the next guy, the post Jake Fromm, after having both Fromm and Fields at one time. And all these guys, for one reason or another, kind of fall off the wagon. And here is Stetson Bennett. And I think this is a great quote by Kirby Smart. Coaches really appreciate this, right? He didn't cry, pout, transfer, do anything, have his parents call, which many coaches can relate to. And he didn't do any of that. He just kept working, and he got the opportunity. So you kind of root for a guy like Stetson Bennett on one level, right? You love to see guys like that wade through everything when they're not supposed to be the guy. But at the same time, I think there's still probably some skeptics saying, okay, how far can you go with a guy like that?
Yeah, well, I will correct Kirby one thing. He did transfer. He just transferred back. He went to junior college. Played a year, but point taken. Yeah, it's a great story. No doubt about it. He was good. That offense was good against Auburn. They had nine possessions in the game, only one three and out on the first of the game. They dominated that game statistically. They dominated on the field. Their defense is really, really good, maybe the best in the league. That's going to be a great – I'm looking forward to watching that offensive line at Tennessee against that defensive front of Georgia. That's going to be the game. And there's a lot of ways to look at this game. I think Georgia's still the better team, but which kind of quarterback plays better? Stetson Bennett, it was a ideal circumstances for him. I mean, not saying there wasn't pressure, but he comes in – off the bench as the backup quarterback at Arkansas, a game that that Georgia has the talent advantage, and once they pulled ahead, you could kind of sense that Arkansas wasn't going to score. And then the fact that they jumped on Auburn quickly, he could settle in. He didn't have to make important throws while they were down. That's what I'll be watching this week. Let's say Tennessee gets up 10-0, 7-0. Or 14-3 or something, and there's a little bit of pressure on that offense, and he has to make some big throws. That'll be the first time, the real litmus test, to see if this is a guy that can win them an SEC East championship or even further when he's put in some really uncomfortable spots.
We're talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic, Mitch after Mason, here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. So down in College Station right now, is there panic, or is it, okay, they went up against Alabama, Alabama's really good, there's still some things that Texas A&M's trying to figure out, or should there be major concern for the Aggies right now?
Chase, you're asking an SEC fan base not to panic. So first of all, you need to,
that's, good luck with that.
That's not going to happen, not panicking. I think when they hired Jimbo, and I know Texas A&M well, I do a radio show down there weekly. I've done it for years. So I talk to the host, and I kind of know what the fans are thinking down there. They hired Jimbo Fisher. It was the greatest day of Texas A&M sports history. It was snap our fingers, we're going to win big. You ask them where they expected to be in 3 years, this is probably not where they thought they would be. I think there was immense pressure on them in this game against Florida. Just losing at home is not part of the formula for year three of Jimbo Fisher. Is there pressure on Jimbo Fisher? Yes, but not from a job. I mean, no hot seat, to put aside the whole, pandemic and finances and stuff like that. He's got a guaranteed contract for 10 years. He would have to go, in my opinion, 8-4 or worse 3 years in a row, really, to be legitimately in the hot seat there. But there's pressure because they have not looked good. That Alabama game, they had that little brief flurry that got them back in the game, I think, in the second quarter, but they were pretty much dominated. And, again, that's not what you sign up for when you – I always say even before they gave Jimbo that contract, I said you don't spend $600 or $500 million in facilities to go 8-4 every year.
Well, to me, they're gonna drop to 1-2 this week, because I'm saying right now I'm a believer in Florida. I like what I've seen the first 2 weeks. Kyle Trask is living up to the part, and Dan Mullen has that thing clicking right now. So I think Florida wins, and you tell me if you agree or disagree with this. In the SEC as a whole, Florida is really the only team that I think matches up with Alabama in a potential SEC championship game.
Well, I think they can score. That's the key. And Alabama has, you know, the DNA of that program has changed. They're still good defensively, but they're not 5, 6, 7 years ago Alabama defense where they're holding you to 2 yards of play. They'll give up some yards. They'll give up some points. So you have, but they're going to score. Their offense has been phenomenal this year. You have to be able to score, outscore Alabama in an SEC championship game. And so I would agree on that standpoint. Florida out of the East, if you're giving me one offense out of the East to score points in Alabama, it's clearly going to be Florida. Now, Florida's defense hasn't been great so far. I think this is going to be a really nice test for them at Texas A&M. Florida's defense doesn't need to be great for them to win the SEC East. It needs to be great for them to win an SEC championship, though.
And go ahead, Willie.
No, go ahead, Chase.
I was just going to ask one more about Ole Miss. I know they got their first win under Lane Kiffin in a thriller against Kentucky. Very wacky game, but a win is a win. Obviously going to be a big test for them. He said nice things about Nick Saban and his time at Alabama. I think that this is one of those matchups that if it were a normal year and maybe after he has a year or two under his belt at Ole Miss, that even if he doesn't have the best team, that this is a team that could steal one. I don't see it this year, but what do you make of that matchup?
It's going to be fun because they have, you know, Kentucky's a pretty good defensive team, and they went up and down the field. To me, the story of Ole Miss has been the quarterback situation, where I was a big John Rice Plumlee fan, enjoyed watching him play last year. It was fun, and, you know, thought he would be the starting quarterback this year, but it's pretty much been the Matt Corral show. He was 24 of 29 for 320, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, rushed for 59 yards on the road. It does, against a good defense. It doesn't get much better than that. And they're a team that, you know, aside from Elijah Moore, they did not have really proven playmakers coming back at wide receiver. They have really good running backs. You know, Jerrion Ealy, Snoop Connor. I thought that's why they were going to go with Plumlee, just kind of run the ball, be kind of a, sort of like Kentucky was last year almost, where they just found different ways to run the ball. But they're throwing it all over the place. I think this Alabama game has a chance to be a 65-38, 42-type game. I think there's going to be a ton of points. I don't – that you guys know, but – whatever the over is, I bet it's a high over, put it that way. I think it's going to be the most – it's hard to beat LSU Mississippi State from 2 weeks ago, but I think it's going to be one of the most fun games of the year at the SEC.
Well, that's what we're looking for, fun. And the last couple of weeks with the SEC going, it has been fun to have those guys back out there. Mitch, thanks for your insight as always. Good luck to your Yankees tonight. They're looking good.
Yeah, it was nice. It was nice to see. I was watching the game, and right after the grand slam, gave my son a high five, and he said, "I'm going to bed." So five run lead in the ninth was good enough for him. So thank you, Willie.
Yes.
Mitch, 68.5. That's the over under for Alabama Ole Miss.
Ooh, I would go over. I think. I knew Chase would come up with the number there.
I got
thank
you.
Thank you.
Chase has access to a lot of numbers. Mitch, we'll talk to you next week.
Take care, guys.
All right, when we come back, we will recap what has happened with the Titans today. No positive tests for a second straight week. Mike Vrabel talked to the media. We'll tell you where they are right now when we come back. This is Darren Donick and Chase on 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
"I found nirvana! I win!"
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $200 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In-app only.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.